He had to get up those potatoes. He had to dig them, and well, he would plow them up. But we had to, that was required, that we had to pick up those potatoes. And of course, he'd take them to the house that they put them in. And that had to be done, or we wouldn't go to the fair. Well, I hated that job. I just hated it. But yet, I wanted to go to the fair. So brother and I would always have to pick up potatoes.
So how did you harvest them? Did you have to dig them up?
With a plow.
With a plow.
He had a mule hitched to a plow. Oh. That's the way he worked his garden, was with a mule and a plow. He had an old horse, Maud was her name, that she wasn't able, she was getting too old to work at the mill. So he just put her in the pasture, and he was kind to Maud. But Maud could plow some in the garden, but she was gentle as she could be, and I was always afraid of a horse or mule. I don't know why. They looked so big to me. I was afraid. Well, he persuaded me, Papa did one day, to get on Maud. And when I didn't have a saddle, and Maud was, I never forget it, well, she was grazing out at the edge of the yard. She was a privileged horse to do what she pleased just about. And so he put me up on Maud, and Maud put her head down, of course, to get some grass. And when did I slid right down over the head. So that's the first and last time I ever got on a horse. It scared me so bad. And I didn't like it anyway, and so that ended my horseback riding.
That was it.
Right there.
Oh, gosh. Do you have any specific memories of when you were at the Carey School? Do you remember any of your classmates or your teachers?
As I told Clarence, one of them the other day, I said, one thing I certainly, is after Libby had called me, and told me she wanted to come, I said, well, about the only thing I can remember is that one mean thing I did when I was down there. I may have done some more, but that one's outstanding. Because I spent it was a weekend I was spending down there. Once a month, our dining room was in the basement, in the kitchen of our dormitory. And that's where, the students ate. And who were boarders, who boarded there. And the teachers, they stayed in the dormitory too, most of them. So once a month, the boys were allowed to come over on Friday night. And we had, of course, we just played games. You didn't go out with them. No, indeed. You didn't go out with the boys. Well, of course, I was just 14 years old, but a lot of the others were too, Maybe some of them younger than me, and some of them older, of course. They were seniors, all the way juniors and seniors there. But the boys from the boys' dormitory were allowed to come over, and we had a social every Friday night sometime. And even then, we had movies. And we'd have something planned anyway. We'd enjoy it. Well, we looked forward to that, of course, because you were not allowed to date or anything any other time during the week. You could walk to church. You could walk down there to the Baptist church in Carey with a boy. You were allowed to do that. I reckon they thought we'd be all right to do that. You could walk to church, but that was it. So we looked forward to it. Well, one weekend that I was stayed down there, And at the school, it was our weekend to have our social. And the teachers, I can't tell you, I don't remember that, why they decided to have evidently some guests. They had some guests. It was for some reason, but I don't remember why, that they were going to need that dining room for something that night. That they were, so we weren't allowed to have it. Well, we were all so outdone and so mad we didn't know what to do. Well, we decided we'd fix them. Well, then you only had one bathroom on the hall. And you did have two commodes and two bathtubs, I think, in that bathroom. And you had to sign up when you wanted to take a bath so that everybody could have a bath at certain times. So, and in our rooms, we had these metal wash bowls and a metal pitcher, so that you could fill up your pitcher, you see, with water and have your wash bowl. That's where you washed your face and your teeth in the morning. Well, no, I think we went to the bathroom to wash our teeth, but you could wash your face in there if you wanted to take a bath. So each room had one of those. So we just decided, well, we'll fix them. We'll just simply take all these pitchers and wash bowls, because they were metal. We'll take them all, and at a certain signal, we'll throw them, everyone down the steps. And that's what we did. And I mean, we didn't get to have it the next time either. We were punished severely, we felt like. But we were so mad, we didn't know what to do. And you can imagine what a noise that made. And here came some of the teachers running to see what in this world. Everybody ran to the room, you know, after it was done. But of course, we had to clean it all up, you know, get them all. But we threw them, everyone down the stairs. I think that's the meanest thing I ever did. We got punished for that. That's an outstanding thing. Now, Mr. Dry was our superintendent. Uh-huh. And he was very kind, and he knew every child that went to school, I think, personally. He was such a delightful person, he really was. And the teachers, when I had a wonderful music teacher, she was really kinder to me than the one at Bonley. That one at Bonley was very, very strict. In fact, my dentist that I have now is from Liberty. She was from Liberty, but she'd come down on the train, you know, and so she took me. She was kind enough that she took me home with her one weekend, the only time I ever went to Liberty. And that's a village and in Chatham County. But maybe I was younger then and homesick to start with. And so I didn't admire her as much as I did the one that I had at Cary. Oh. But she was just such a sweet little person. Mm-hmm. Can't even call her name right now. It's in the book. But anyway.
So what was your room? How many girls were in a room in the Cary School? Two girls to a room,
yes,
one roommate.
She lived out from Raleigh, in the country, yeah. Out from Raleigh.
Now, how many rooms were there on a floor? How many girls had to share the one bathroom?
I would guess about 14 to 15.
Wow. Yeah.
And what I mean, the teachers, well, now, there weren't as many girls on the first floor as there were on the second. Most of the teachers on the first floor.
Oh, okay.
They stay there. And I guess they just had one bathroom, too. But I remember we had to sign up when you wanted to take a bath in the bathtub. Didn't have a shower. You didn't know what that was. You were fortunate to have a bathtub. Because I was reared without such. And I know all about going out to the outhouse.
Oh, boy. That's when you...
At Bonley, that's what we did. We didn't have a bathroom at Bonley.
You didn't?
No. Had a large outhouse. Maybe it had, six holes.
Okay. Oh, my.
Yes, we did.
And was there one for the boys and one for the girls?
Uh-huh. Yeah. Oh, yes. Because they won't... The school was in... Building was in the middle.
Okay.
And there was a dormitory on each side.
And you had to go outside morning, noon, or night to use the outhouse.
Oh, we had a slop jar.
Oh, you did? That night?
We had a slop jar, but you had to take that out to empty it. And I was reared in a home like that, so it didn't make any difference for me because I was accustomed to it.
Right.
Of course, now it sounds very repulsive, but...
That's what everyone had. Yeah, now how did you take a bath when you were at...
You took a bath just at home. We had a wash tub that once a week, unless it was hot weather. If it was hot weather, it was more often. Once a week, Mama would put that wash tub in the kitchen because it was warm in there. I mean, had a heater in there, you know, and had fireplaces in the other places. And so we'd and put water in it, fill it full, and get in the tub. Because as I grew up, you know, I couldn't get everything in there at the same time. But anyway, I grew, so it must have made me grow.
Yes.
And everybody in the country, that's what they had.
So. And did you all share the same water? I mean, everybody took a bath in the same water?
No, one after another?
No. Oh, you changed the water for each person?
Yes.
Did you have to haul the water in from outside?
And we had a well.
From a well.
Had to draw the water.
Draw the water, bring it in, heat it up on the stove, put it in the tub. That's a lot of work.
Sure it was. But I said that people today, they just don't know. They think they work hard, but they just don't know anything.
No.
No physical work.
Yeah, that's for sure. And all that work just to take a bath.
My children, they don't know anything.
I don't either.
Well, we did heat water for our tub baths way back.
What?
We did heat water for
our tub baths. Well, that was in the summertime because... when you children were young, we had a coal heater in the kitchen with a tank, you know, behind it to heat the water. Well, it would be so hot when it was weather like this, because you didn't have air conditioning. We did have fans, but we didn't have air conditioning. And it would be so hot to build a fire, you know, to heat water so that I had a great big pot, and I'd heat that, you know, boiling, and pour it in the tub, and then run. The water was just most too cold for them to take a bath, and that would take the chill off of the water. Take a bath in the tub. But
oh gosh, now where were you living the first time you had indoor plumbing? What house was that? Do you remember?
It was the house went to housekeeping in. And it's, you don't know anything about Chapel Hill, do you? I
mean, not much, no.
Well, then you wouldn't know. It's South Chapel Hill.
Okay.
And it's where it was.
Okay. Now, is this after you were married?
When we married, that was, my husband had already bought this little five-room house before we married. He'd already bought it. And it didn't have the plumbing when we first went there, but then we built another room onto it. And a bath there to it, but we'd been married. Now we had water in the house, but we were out. Then I thought we were way out in the country. Of course, we were incorporated then in '69. That we were incorporated, but then when we first married, we were about it's a little over a mile, I reckon, to the center of Chapel Hill, isn't it, from where we lived, the old house. And every one of my children were born at home in that house.
Really? Born at home?
All four of them were born at home. This hospital wasn't here then.
Oh, gosh.
You had to go to Durham if you went to hospital, and not many women went to the hospital unless they lived in Durham. And
now, did you have a doctor or a midwife?
Oh, yes, had
a doctor.
Was a doctor. Had a doctor.
Who made house calls?
Oh, yeah.
And delivered you.
He sure did.
He made house calls if you were sick.
Yeah.
Then when Linda was born, was when my next door neighbor, which she was just like a sister to me just about, and she was over there with me that night when he was born. And she laughed about that till she died. Periodically she'd laugh about it. She said, just as soon as he was born, Esper said, "Eben, it's a boy," and he said, I see it. That was always so funny to her. I see it.
Finally got his boy.
So I laughed and said, well, I can stop having babies then. That was the end. There he is. He's so much like his daddy. With me over there. He
That's great.
Because he's 66 years old, but he says he's not going to retire until his hands go to shaking.
Oh, good for him. Keep working. Yeah, that's great.
So he said, he laughs, and see, all three of my daughters taught school, and all three have retired. And he said, well, somebody in this family's got to work. So he's 66. But
so now he's the surgeon, right? He's a surgeon. Oh, that's great. That's great.
He does, he's a plastic surgeon, which he does a lot of reconstruction, though.
Okay.
That's great.
He does. Very important.
He's,
Now, what did your husband do for a living?
He operated a fleet of trucks for general hauling and ran Merritt Store for 49.5 years.
Now, what was the Merritt? Now, I passed a sign on the way here that said Merritt Mill Road. Is that related to him?
No, that's not
family?
The vicinity.
It might be that some of the slaves of Mr. Merritt, that, you know, they take on the names of their owners, and you don't know.
Huh.
The Merritt Store is on South Columbia Street as you go out toward Pittsburgh. It's same as 15501,
yeah,
in South Columbia until you get out of the city limits.
Yeah, okay. And what was the store? What did it sell?
Oh, it was a service station and general merchandise, you know.
Okay. A general store and gas station?
Yeah, it was, they didn't carry everything, but light groceries,
I'll tell you what it was. It was a 7-Eleven.
Okay.
Yes, that's right.
Convenience store.
Yeah, kind of thing. But that was before 7-Eleven was ever invented, but yeah. Dad had one before they ever had one.
He ran it 49.5 years.
Oh,
and he ran it 7 to midnight.
Yes, he sure did. It was 7.
All by himself? Did he have
No, he had
back
helpers.
In the Depression he did, didn't he, Mother?
That's right. During the Depression, I went through the Depression. I know all about that.
Oh.
And I was pregnant with Virginia. And it was 29, year 29. And he didn't have enough work. Those three trucks, he could not buy a license for them. He didn't have enough work to buy a license for them. They sat in our backyard, those three trucks. He had this store that he bought. And so he just ran it by himself because he didn't have enough business. People couldn't run the cars. Talk about gas. You couldn't sell gas because there weren't enough cars running.
Right.
And so he would stay. He would sell enough saving and living things, you know, that he could afford to run it and make a little something. So that we lived on it in a way, because it's just he and I. And then Virginia was born in November, and he laughed and said, well, business began to pick up after that. She's born 29.
Oh, 29.
And it did. It began to get better in 30. And it didn't, it wasn't perfect, but it began to get better.
Huh.
There were a lot of, down in the country, beyond us, I'd say a mile from us, or anywhere from a half mile to a mile from us, down there were several carpenters, and good carpenters. There were four of them that I know personally, or knew personally. They're gone now. And they could not afford to run a car, to go to work. And they were working on a dam that now dams of our water supply, or a portion of it, here at Chapel Hill and Carborough. And they were working on that dam. And early every morning, you'd see them coming up the highway with a little bag, their lunch in it, they would walk all the way. And it was at least 2 miles. And they would walk to work.
And
I tell you that.
About a dollar.
You know what?
Okay.
And they got 25 cents an hour, and they were glad to get there.
Yeah, I bet they were. I bet they were.
I said,
was it a work project?
If that happens again with the generation now that we have, that's been raised to have everything, there's going to be more thievery than it's ever been.
I can't even imagine it today.
No, you couldn't imagine.
No.
Uh-uh.
No.
And, so
was that a government work project, a WPA project, that dam?
It did.
Yes, it was. Yeah.
That's
work.
That's what it was. And there was a camp that's not too far from here. It's in Chatham County. There was a camp down there, and it was a WPA camp that they had. And they worked on road projects and various projects, and they were glad to get to work, even
at
25 cents an hour.
Oh, you bet. Yeah.
They were glad because people just simply didn't have anything. And you see, the banks closed. Now, my uncle, and my grandmother, my grandfather McHaney had died, but because grandmother was his second wife, his first wife died, and she was quite a bit younger than he. And you see, he came back from the Civil War, and he married his wife had died while he was gone, and left one child. And so he married a much younger woman than did before. So she was still living during the Depression. But she lost just about everything she had in the bank. And so many people did. My father, fortunately, he was one of these. He always said that the world will never grow any more land, and so he invested in right much land.
Oh.
And he happened to have that, and that was a savior, because he had it later then that he could dispose of it, you don't get money, and so there.
So that was fortunate.
But I know about that, and I counted up how many wars I lived through. You see, I can barely remember World War I. I was 9 years old, and my grandfather and grandmother McHaney, this just stands in my mind, and that's why I can remember it. It would impress me so, that they came from Virginia and came down on the Chatham Wiggler to visit us one summer. They stayed, I don't know, maybe a month, I don't remember now. And the only way we'd get the paper, my father always took the newspaper, was when the mail came. That's when we would get the paper. And so he would bring it in to them, and it was in the summer, and they'd be sitting on that back porch, and they'd take the paper. You see, you had no other way to hearing the news about, or learning the news about the war. Was what was in the paper. You had no other way of knowing. So they knew so many people in World War I, and they'd read the paper and read about the deaths and things, and they'd sit there and cry. And you see, that impressed me.
Of course.
As a child, and so that's why I remember it so well.
Sure.
That's about all I can remember about World War I. Now, when they declared armistice, so I remember everybody in the whole community, they were ringing in dinner bells. That impressed me so that I can remember that. Everybody was so happy, you know, about it. And then World War II. Now, can you remember, Clarice, when it ended?
I can remember.
The stamps, do you remember?
I can remember us sitting in circles with those stamps, because you and Daddy would let us put stamps on.
And you see, we had to have stamps to get the children's shoes, stamps. So we were allowed, since we had four children, we were allowed so much, you know, for that. And I remember that all very well. See, Wendell was...
Wendell had polio during that time, didn't he?
Yes.
Yeah.
Wendell was born in 40. And, of course, that's when the war started. You know, we were attacked in 40, I think, and then the 41, which was it?
Pearl Harbor was 41, I think.
It was 41, I believe. And anyway, when he was 3 years old, he had polio.
Oh, no.
And he sure did. And, of course, we went through a whole lot then. And you had to have stamps, you see, for your gas. Unless you had a business of some sort, you know, you were just allotted just such a small amount of stamps to get your gas. Well, see, my husband was operating that service station, but he could not buy not 1 gallon of gas to put in his storage tanks unless he had a stamp for that gallon.
Even to resell it to customers.
That's right.
Really?
And then he had to collect the stamp from the from the customer. And I can tell you that was a headache.
Oh yeah.
And you put 100 on a sheet. They were like stamps. I mean, you dampen them and.
We would do. I mean, that was just one of the best skills to reading. I mean, she wasn't aware of that. That's what we had to find the like stamps to go on the like sheets. You see, and that's a wonderful reading skill.
Sure, you learned how to read by putting the stamps on the cards.
Yes, and now that was a headache.
Yeah. Now, so you needed gas to get him to a doctor.
He was in the hospital about a month, I think, 26 days, I believe it was.
In Durham?
He was at Duke.
At Duke.
This hospital wasn't here.
Okay.
And he was at Duke. And, you know, it's right, good little ways, 13 miles to Duke. And, of course, they wouldn't let us visit him for the first two. He was quarantined for 2 weeks.
Sure.
And he was just 3 years old. I thought I would die when I left him that day.
Oh,
and I sure did. And my husband, when he would close that store at night, no matter what time it was, he'd go back over to Duke. And he was in a room that was half glass, because that's the way those wards were, so that the nurse could stand up, you see, and look all the way down a hall to see if a child was up or something. She could. Well, he wouldn't want Wendell to see him, of course. And he'd go there and peep at him, you know, and if he was asleep. And, of course, he'd always find out from the nurse, you know, how it was and everything. But I wouldn't go. I said, no, I feel like I'm looking at him in a casket. I would not go. I just wouldn't do it. And after 2 weeks, they'd let me stay 2 hours. Or us, rather, both of us would do it. Let us stay 2 hours was all a day. Nowadays they welcome you to their mother or father to stay with them.
Yeah.
And you know, that's the way they did in those days.
Well, what parts of his body were affected by the polio?
It was, at the time he was taken, it was his back. I was holding him. I remember the night before he went to hospital, it was so hot. It was in August. And it was just about as hot as it is now. And, you know, we all had fans. And we had a porch, back porch. And I remember I took him out on the back porch that night, not knowing, you see, what was the matter with him. And sat down in a rocking chair and held him. And I thought it was because his head, he would just fret and cry. But yet he had a temperature so that, you know, he was just about, I think, just about semi-conscious. And every time I'd try to raise him up like that, he'd press his head back. I mean, that's what I thought, that he had, that his head was hurting so bad.
Yeah.
And when the doctor examined him, he said, well, he didn't tell me. He told my husband, though. He says it's not, because he'd examined him the night before I sat up with him. He told Eben, he said, don't tell Ruby tonight, because he's a personal friend of ours. Don't tell Ruby tonight, because it won't do any good. But Eben, I'm afraid he's got polio. And I said, poor Eben, he had to live with that all night.
Aww.
But, you know, I didn't know it. And so I sat up all night long holding him out there on the porch like that. And, well, the next morning, Dr. Hedgepeth came. And that he told me then, says, what I've already called Dr. McBride in Durham, a pediatrician at Duke, and he says, I want you and Eben to take him over there this morning. Ruby, I'm afraid he's got polio. Well, I was so in hopes he was mistaken, you know. So, well, we went next morning, took him, and Dr. McBride looked at me. He says, that's what it is. And that's when I had to hand him over to a nurse, and I thought I would choked to death, because to give him up when he'd never been away from me and hand him to strangers and him sick like that. But that's what you had to do in those days, and it was hard.
Well, did he have any lasting damage?
Yes, he wears a shoe that's built up just about that much on his right foot, and his right, that shoe is two sizes smaller than the other one. He has to buy two pairs of shoes. He's got expensive feet.
Yes, indeed.
And you know, walking hard floors all these years.
Does he have to stand during surgery as
and
well?
He's had four surgeries? Let's see, he had one when he was 5 years old. They had to operate on his foot. His back did get the strength back in his back from all of that therapy he had, but his leg and hip, he didn't. And he had to have therapy for about at least a year, maybe more than that. When he was in the hospital, they started therapy, but they used a tank of water, you see, so that it's built up so that the nurses, you know, your back wouldn't kill you with it. They put a towel under his arms and clench it together in the back and hold him like that and have him to, you know, keep doing, and they made a game out of it, you know. Mm-hmm. Or now we going to do this, that, and the other, fly like a bird, and you know, all those things, make a game so he could enjoy playing it, you see. And kept him in water. He was in water doing it. You know, you can move in water, and that's what they did. Well, they got his back just about cured. In fact, I've never heard him complain with his back like that, but they didn't his leg. So they told us that they thought he would need to go. You see, they built a hospital at Greensboro because a year before there had been so much polio throughout the nation that they set up hospitals here and yonder and everywhere in North Carolina. It was epidemic in North Carolina, but it was the year before. It wasn't that year. They had a hospital in Greensboro. Then they had a rehabilitation center it was toward Asheville, up there somewhere. I don't exactly know where it was. Anyway, they told us that they recommended that one. It says he'll need to go there to finish. That's what they told us at the hospital. And now that was when he'd been up there maybe 2 weeks or something like that. Well, so I just thought, well, I can't leave these other three and go with him and stay. I can't do that. And yet, I just thought, well, I can't stand the thoughts of him going up there by himself. I was just devastated.
Sure.
So, after they would allow me to go to the hospital, they would allow me to go in and watch him have the therapy. And so I would watch, you know, what they would do. So one day I went, and they'd applied to this rehabilitation center. They'd already sent in the application for him to go when he left due. Well, I went one day, and the nurse said, Ms. Merritt, one afternoon, I went up there and said, Ms. Merritt, Dr. McBride wants to see you. And I thought, oh, it's time to go. And I just almost shouted. He said, how much time do you have to spend with this child? I said, I couldn't understand, you know, what he meant. And he said, what I mean is, if you have plenty of time, says, I think you're the type of mother that would do it. And he said, I thought I probably would just send him home with you. And if you'll go to school here at least a week or 10 days and to take the course, you'll learn how to do it, and bring him back here 3 times a week. That we'd do it. Well, I said, my time will be his. The other three are fine. So I think it was 26th day that, but they had me to go to school for a week. Okay. I went to school every day up there. And
the Sister Kenny method.
Oh, the Sister Kenny method. Okay. Right. Okay.
Yeah, that was it. That was the method.
Yes.
And so that
she learned.
Well, you see, doing it there, standing up, you know, with that water was much easier when I got home and had to get down on my knees at the bathtub. Mm.
Yeah.
That's what I had to do when I got home. I had to do it. But I did it. And Wendell's forever saying, Mother, I know that's what's wrong with your back now. he's yeah. thanked me many times,
aww.
I'll tell you. Of course, he was so little, he doesn't remember it. I'd go 3 times a week, and they'd watch me. They watched me, I mean, before they ever let me bring them home.
Yeah.
They watched me do it. And the therapist
would. She got to be a nurse after all.
Yes, there you go. There you go. You got to do your nursing.
Yeah.
I sure did. I tell you, I got my training in nursing.
Now, when was he able to walk again?
At Christmas, we brought him home. He had it in August, and it was Christmas week. I'll never forget it. We were in the living room, and the children, Santa Claus had come and had everything, you know, because it was close to the tree, you see, that's where it was. And we'd been trying him just a little, like he would a child that's just started to walk. And he turned it loose and made some steps, and we all just shouted, you know.
Aww.
And so from that, then he started walking a little bit. But I took him, then it got to be that I could just take him once a week. It was about 2 years before we ever completely were discharged from Duke.
Wow.
But stayed on my knees many, many, many hours. And I had one of these, in my kitchen, I had one of those little porcelain top tables. And it was about so long and maybe that wide, you know, just a little kitchen table. And the one thing they emphasize says, don't put anything that he has to do that will force him, that he has to force himself to do. Everything had to be slick, you know, very slick, so it'd be easy to do. Because he couldn't do it. If it was too hard, a 3-year-old child, you know, won't cooperate as well. And so I used that porcelain top table, and I would put powder all over it so it made it slick, and put him on there, and see, let him move his leg, you know, back and forth, and sit him up and put him down. And
it paid off, though.
It sure did, and I didn't have to send him to a rehabilitation center.
Right. Oh, that's so great.
And I've often wondered if that wasn't the reason that he chose his profession.
It could be.
Because he has so much compassion.
Oh.
So much compassion for people.
Isn't that great?
He'll come down here, and if he has a patient, even though he's left maybe in charge of somebody, but if he has a patient in the hospital that he's not completely satisfied, he's on that telephone by the time he gets in. Of course, he always leaves the number where he would be, and he gets called every time he comes.
Yeah.
Well, twice, but he has so much compassion for people.
Yeah. So that was probably your primary memory from World War II was really Wendell's polio. Far more than the war itself.
Before he took polio, before he got sick, they had some training center here for
AFRTC, wasn't it?
Well, it was pre-flight.
Pre-flight
school was here in connection with the college somewhere or other. And
I think your village was
that was after the war, see, it's when they formed Victor Village. They would come down to our street marching and down the road. And Wendell, of course, there he was, you know, 3 years old. And well, he was 3 in April and had this in August. And he'd run out in our yard as soon as he heard them, you know, he'd run out in the yard. And he'd, of course, he wasn't allowed to go out in the road. He'd march all the way parallel to them, you know, all the way across the yards, parallel to them, just march, march, march.
So these were soldiers that were practicing their marching?
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
And the road would be full. I mean, the cars would have to stop for them, you know. The street would be full, coming all the way down our way, and he'd march full length. And I said, poor little fellow, then he was thrown off his feet, you know.
And my grandmother said, well, at least he won't ever have to be in the army.
That was Grandmother Mary. She always tried to find something, because I was just so killed. I was just so hurt. After he went to hospital, I was just bawling. I was just crying. And Grandmother Mary says, well, now look at it this way. He won't have to go to war. And lo and behold, he had to go to Vietnam.
He did? He went to Vietnam?
As a doctor.
Oh, was a doctor, really?
As a doctor, he sure did.
So he was in a field hospital in Vietnam?
He was in a
field hospital. A field hospital.
Like
a MASH unit kind of
thing.
Really?
He was the nearest field hospital to Hamburger Hill. Do you recall that?
Yes, indeed.
So many, you know, it just butchered.
And when they were taking him in, and the guys were checking him out, you know, when they come down, they said, how in the world did you ever get in here? Because he had two feet, you know, they were getting him for the uniforms.
Oh.
Like, how in the world did you get in this war with feet like this? You know, had to buy two sets of shoes.
Wendell said, he threw out a curse word and said, you see, they had to fit them in uniforms, you know, with shoes and everything. And so he said, did you get in? He says, because Uncle Sam told me to, that's how I got in. But if he had appealed to one of his congressmen, he wouldn't have had to go on. But he said, no, his buddies were going. He went over with some others.
Yeah.
And he said they went, and he didn't attempt to object to it. He went right on.
Now, what years was he? When was he there?
69.
In 69?
Well, he left, I think it was December, because he was over there at Christmas of 68. He was 68. Over there at Christmas, but he came back in 69. Okay. He went in the fall, I think it was, of 68, because he was over there a year.
Wow.
And my mother died while he was over there. But she was in the hospital when he left. And he went over, he felt like he wouldn't see anymore. Mm-hmm. And so, of course, I didn't even call him to let him know about it, because it was too much to come back. He could have been sent back, but it's too dangerous. Yeah. And yes, he was the nearest field hospital to Hamburger Hill. And that's the only depressing letter he ever wrote home. He'd write every week. We heard from him every week. Except at that time, and see, we heard it over TV, how horrible it was, and we knew what sort of way it was. And of course, they had no respect. The enemy had no respect for a field hospital. They bombed that as quick as they would anything. And we didn't hear from it, and we didn't hear from it. And Evan and I both were just so disturbed and about it. But when I did get the letter, he said, I feel. It's the first time I felt like a butcher instead of a doctor. That's what he said in the letter. Because he said, they just brought him in, you know, one after the other. And he says, we could have saved so many limbs on boys if we had had the equipment.
Oh.
But we did not have it. And said, in order to save the life,
right. They
had to remove a leg or remove an arm or whatever it was in order to save a life.
Oh, that's tragic.
And that was the only depressing letter that we ever, and no doubt he felt like he wanted to write it, but I think he was so hurt. And he said, after he got home, he told us, he said that we were in blood so much, there were just so many coming in, we did not have time to take a bath or change clothes or anything, and said, our uniform.
They were just stiff. Oh, boy. cannot thank you enough for your taking your time. You have told me so many wonderful stories, and I just treasure having this information. This is so great. I mean, this is exactly the kind of thing we're interested in.
Well, what are you?
Days gone by. So anyway. Well, anyway, but we just really appreciate all your time and effort today, and we will try to put this to very good use for the community.
I hope you can use something.
Oh, I'm sure we can.
I've enjoyed it because Claire's telling you that I always love to talk.
Well, I think it's wonderful, so thank you.
This is a...